Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at Go For It Gannon. And while you're there on Twitter at Go For It Gannon, why don't you give me a follow there at Go For It Gannon. Big show lined up for you today. Expected to be joined by heavyweight contender Seth Mitchell. Seth Mitchell's going to talk about his impressive performance against Chaz Witherspoon. Had a little adversity in that fight, overcame it, and ultimately he got the TKO victory. So we're going to be talking to him. Also, we're going to be joined by Johnny Patrick, corner for the New Orleans Saints. We're going to get his thoughts on the upcoming season, get his thoughts on some of his bounty business as well. And also, we're going to be joined by free agent safety, former Super Bowl winner, Chris Hope. And Chris is going to stop on by. He's got a great little basketball game coming up, charity basketball game coming up May 19th in South Carolina. So we're going to talk to him about that charity basketball game and much, much more. Great show as always. And then, of course, what is a show without the great 2012 Hall of Fame and Doug D, the one, the only, 11-time Pro Bowler, the great Willie Rope, and he will be joining us. Also, Willie's a big-time basketball fan. And so, of course, being that he is a big-time basketball fan, we're going to talk a little basketball with him as well and just have a good old time with the great Willie Rofe. I want to start now with the NBA playoffs. Last night, big game in L.A., and you say L.A., oh, no, I'm not talking about the Lakers. I'm talking about the Clippers. Clippers, Grizzlies, game six. And a game, if you're the Clippers, you had to win being up 3-2, and you didn't want to have to go back to Memphis, but guess what? They're going to have to go back to Memphis and play the Memphis Grizzlies. Zach Randolph and those boys getting it done when they needed to get it done yesterday. They won the last two games in this series. And you knew, because how evenly matched these two teams were, you knew that this series was going to be a long series. And you knew that when the Clippers went up 3-1, you knew the series wasn't over. You knew the series wasn't over. You knew that there was still still had an opportunity to win the game, win this series, the Memphis Grizzlies. You know it. I mean, the Grizzlies and these two teams are very evenly matched. They're evenly matched. They're so close. And when I was predicting this series and I came around talking about this series, I didn't know which way to go. I didn't know which way to go, but I know this. Being that these two teams are so close, so evenly matched, I know we're going to have a dogfight in Game 7, and I knew we would have a dogfight in this series. I mean, you saw that. You saw that. But the reality is the Memphis Grizzlies are a very good basketball team, and the Clippers are banged up. They were banged up yesterday. Blake Griffin with his knee, and also Chris Paul with his hip injury. So you knew those two teams were you knew the Clippers were banged up. You knew they were banged up, and that was going to be a problem. That was going to be a problem, and it was a problem. I mean, it was a problem for the Clippers. Those guys didn't really seem completely like themselves. And I think with those two guys being banged up, I think that favors Memphis. Obviously, having a home game in a Game 7 favors the Grizzlies. So I like the Grizzlies to ultimately win this series and win it in Game 7. I mean, and again, being down 3-1, you knew, and I knew this series was not over. I knew the series was not over when those two teams, when the Clippers went up 3-1. You knew the Grizzlies had so much talent, and too much talent. And you look at the games. I mean, game one, they just gave game one. They're up 20 most of the ball game, and then the fourth quarter up 20, and then you give that lead away. I mean, the Clippers stole game one. They stole game one, and from there, you look at the whole situation. From there, the Grizzlies were able, I mean, the Clippers were able to win their two games at home. But the Grizzlies came right back, and an impressive performance by that team. A tough team, a tough-minded team, Zach Randolph, Z-Bo, with that old man game. And he has definitely has an old man game. I heard Ronnie Thompson say yesterday on NBA TV that this man couldn't even jump over a phone book. And he might be right about Zach Randolph. He can't jump over a phone book, but for somehow, some way, he finds a way to get it done. And, I mean, he has that old man game, that YMCA game. You'll see, you can see Zach Randolph at your local YMCA, that old game, that old man game, that jump shot. I mean, he doesn't even jump with that jump shot. It's just amazing how he gets the rebounds that he gets. It's amazing how he does some of the things that he does. I mean, give him a lot of credit. Give him a lot of credit, and I mean, and give the Memphis Grizzlies a lot of credit. A tough-minded ball club, and guess what? They're going 7 tomorrow. Also, big game 7 tonight for the Lakers and Nuggets. Again, the Lakers up 3-1 in their series against the Nuggets. And in that series, you thought, you know what? It was over. You thought maybe the series was over. You thought the Lakers would close them out probably in 5. But give George Karl and the Denver Nuggets a lot of credit. They came out and took game 5 against the Lakers, and they came out game 6. Kobe was sick, and the Nuggets just dominated that particular ball game. Went up and down the court in that particular ball game. Ty Lawson, Aflala, Fareed, I mean, Gallinari, and those boys, they came through and they got it done. They came through and they got it done, and they blew the Lakers out in game six. Excuse me. And then you had Kobe calling out Gasol, calling out Bynum. And let's talk about Bynum for a second. I mean, is there any more of a head case in the game of basketball than Andrew Bynum? I mean, Andrew Bynum is a head case. He's standing away from the huddles and you know, so on and so forth. Just doing, you know, weird stuff. And talented as I don't know what, can get it done, obviously. Not many big men in the league can get it done the way Andrew Bynum can get it done. But the guy is just an enigma in some respect. I mean, he's childish, he's sophomoric, and he just does some things that make you scratch your head. It makes me scratch my bald head a lot when I'm talking about Andrew Bynum. But I think the Lakers will get it done tonight. Kobe is Kobe, and that will be the difference. Kobe is the difference. And expect a better performance out of Bynum and Gasol after being called out by Kobe. And Kobe can call you out, and you just have to accept it because he's Kobe Bryant. And Kobe Bryant playing, he was nauseous, had the stomach ailment, and guess what? He found a way to get it done. Put up big-time numbers the other night, but it wasn't enough. He didn't get the help from his number two and number three best players on that team. But Kobe, help is on the way in a form of peace. Peace is on his way. Metal world peace. His suspension is over. He will be back for game 7. If you want toughness, if you want a guy that's going to ride with you, if you want a guy that's going to get in a foxhole with you, that is metal world peace. So, Kobe, you got your man metal world peace back. You know what you're going to get from him. He's going to play hard. He's going to compete. He's another one, though, we got to be watchful and mindful of, because we never know when he could absolutely positively just lose it and do some stupid swing elbows, throw them bowls, as Ludacris would like to say.
So wait. So you're saying the missing piece for the Lakers is metal world peace? I mean, you're saying that's been the hiccup in their offensive game?
What I'm saying is with metal world peace, when you looked at metal world peace, I saw a stat the other day, Lakers are 500 with metal world, without metal world peace. They have a 600 winning percentage with metal world peace. And metal world peace, before he went down, was playing his best basketball of the season. He was averaging 15 points, I believe, last month of the season. So he's playing some good basketball at the time before he, you know, did what he did and acted the way he acted. And he decided to act a fool, basically, and start throwing those bulls like Ludacris would like to say. And ultimately, it got him a 7-game suspension. He's lucky that he's going to be able to play. I mean, he's a lucky man that he's even playing this season after all that would happen with Metta World Peace. But I don't think the Lakers will lose tonight. Game 7 in your own building. Game 7 in your own – and you got to favor the home team in a Game 7. It's just statistically speaking, the numbers will tell you you have to favor the home team. And the Lakers, I think, are the better team. But I'm not going to sit here and say the Nuggets don't have a shot, because I'd be an absolute fool if I tell you that the Nuggets didn't have a shot. They do have a shot to win this ball game tonight. They have a big-time shot to win this game.
I'm surprised. So you really – I say the Lakers are going to want to lose, and I think the Nuggets are going to win. I mean, Paul, this is a team – first of all, I think who lost this game for them actually is Magic Johnson and his crazy talk this week about, you know, they're going to fire Mike Brown and they're going to blow up the Lakers, which they're blowing up the Lakers. Not blowing up the Lakers doesn't mean anything anyway. Getting in the NBA playoffs for the Lakers is doesn't mean anything anyway either. I mean, this is a team that you talked about buying them. I mean, this is a team that is really – talk about the laughing stock of the NBA. I mean, they make Lamar – they're making Lamar Odom look like a Hall of Famer. They actually are missing a player who, I mean, is average at best. They're missing him.
Well, he was below average this year, but he was – a six-man award winner last season. He gave them big punch off the bench last year, and they miss him. They do miss what they had with Lamar Odom. I think they definitely miss that. I mean, and we can't – I know a lot of us see what we saw this year. We saw what we saw this year with Lamar Odom, but Lamar Odom was obviously not Lamar Odom. He was dealing with some issues, off-the-court issues. He was obviously not the same guy. For whatever reason, it could have been, he had a situation. I believe his cousin died this offseason. He had some things going on with him. But ultimately, he was not Lamar Odom that we all know and love, the six-man award-winning Lamar Odom, the versatile Lamar Odom, the do-it-all Lamar Odom that we know and love in the past. So he wasn't that guy for the Mavericks. And the Lakers missed that. They think they do miss that because they basically got nothing for Lamar Odom. So they just gave him away, basically. For a can of pennies or whatnot. So, you know, they missed that. They missed that. But I wouldn't be surprised if they lost, but I don't think they will. And to your point, I think to Magic Johnson's point, you talked about Magic Johnson, if Mike Brown and the Lakers don't get out of the first round, I think you got to talk about at least possibly not bringing Mike Brown back. But at the same time, I will say this. It's kind of hard to overreact in a lockout-shortened season in some respect, because some teams benefited and some teams didn't. And some teams were able to work well within that whole situation, and some teams weren't. And you look at this whole NBA playoff right now, and this is not about – if in some respect you say, is it really about talent or is it about which team is the healthiest? Chicago Bulls, for example, obviously they were the more talented team. Obviously they were the better basketball team than Philadelphia 76ers. But when you lose Derrick Rose, you lose your two best players, Derrick Rose for pretty much most of this series, and then Joakim Noah for about half of this series, you know, you're going to pay. You can't. It's hard to keep replacing and replacing those type of guys. Derrick Rose, an MVP a year ago, Joakim Noah, active big man, rebound the basketball, can block the shots. I mean, you can't replace those guys. And if you look at that particular ball game, Game 6, Sixers, Chicago Bulls, and C.J. Watson as he brought the ball up, if that was Noah instead of Ashiq, and Noah is a better free throw shooter than Ashiq, you wonder if Noah would at least made one. Noah is a much better free throw shooter than Ashiq. And the Bulls just gave that game. C.J. Watson, I mean, just a boneheaded play by him. A point guard in that particular situation, he gave the ball up to a 46% free throw shooter in Omar Ashiq. I mean, that's something you just don't do. You hold on to that basketball. You're an 80% free throw shooter. You hold on to that basketball. You take the foul, and you shoot those free throws. If that happens, if C.J. Watson does the right thing there, we're probably talking Game 7 Bulls-Sixers tonight instead of Game 1 Sixers-Celtics. So, I mean, but I look at this whole thing, and you got Pierce who's banged up right now. I just look at this whole playoff may come down to who is the healthiest. Darwin would really love this series because this is all of this NBA playoff because this is all about survival of the fittest. Only the strong will survive in this particular playoff, and the healthiest will survive. And we'll see who will be the healthiest The Miami Heat are very healthy right now and playing some great basketball. Oklahoma City Thunder, very healthy right now, playing great basketball. San Antonio Spurs, very healthy right now and playing great basketball. So we'll see which team is the healthiest. The healthiest will win and go very far in these playoffs. Bottom line, that's the way I see it. It's all about who's going to be healthiest. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you, I mean, doesn't this bode well for the, I think, the fake, the people's champ, if you will, the Miami Heat? I mean, because you said this, I mean, if you're in Chicago, you have to be, on how, you know, they ran through that series and really it didn't turn ugly, because it had to be frustrating to know that they were the way better team, and now they're out of the playoffs. And really, who is really going to challenge Miami, where you talk about it in the West, and it does look like it's going to come down between a San Antonio, like you say, and a Thunder team, but there will be at least matchups that will challenge the contender coming from the West. You look at the East, and there's no one.
Well, I mean, I guess now it's, you were saying theoretically it would come down to Boston and Miami. Pacers are going to be a tough out for the Heat, though. They have the size. They have some size with Hibbert and Hansbrough, and of course you have David West. So that is a team, a very good basketball team with a lot of depth that can give a team's problems. And I think it's going to be a long series for the Heat. It's not going to be a pushover against this Indiana Pacer team. This is a deep team and a team that has size. And what's the Miami Heat's weakness? Size. And so Roy Hibbert, our all-star this year, David West, you got Granger who can score the basketball, George Hill, who's playing some good basketball. I mean, Paul George also. You got Collison, Darren Collison, you can bring off the bench, and Hansbrough. I mean, you got some players that you can put in, and, you know.
You're nuts, Paul.
You got some players that can definitely.
Paul, you got to remember, these are players who they've never been here before, and they're going up against the people's champ. And now, I mean, the wow factor for the Heat does matter. And second of all, I mean, the size is important. The only way it will happen, the X factor is always going to be Wade. It's not James. The X factor is going to be Wade. If Wade can get that ball and score his 20 and get 20 and 8 every game, I mean, they can't. Because then you're talking about LeBron James will come out with another double-double, probably 10 rebounds, minimum 20 points, and there's no way they'll be able to stop that wave. So, I mean, I see that series wrapping up in six games, but it will be a quick six games.
Well, I mean, you're talking, you don't think it's going to be a competitive six games.
No, I think honestly, that if Miami is smart, they don't want to run, you know, run through a five-game series. And the reason I say that is because, sure, it sucks to go out there and play games, but I do believe it's going to be physical. And I think that for them to sit out in the perimeter and play a perimeter game rather than take the beating, especially for a player like Chris Bosh, who doesn't have the strength to do that, and it will wear him out. And they're trying to fulfill this dream that the people have, so to speak, then they need to take it easy. Because they will not, if LeBron James tries to get himself, you know, or get against foul trouble, he will quickly find shoulders and elbows, and the same with Chris Bosh. And I think that does take Bosh more than James way out of his game.
Well, I will say this. I mean, I think anytime you have an opportunity, especially in these playoffs, especially with the condensed schedule, especially with the lockout shortened season, I think you want to get any series over as fast as you can, because anything can happen. And I brought the Chicago Bulls. They lost their two best players.
Well, Paul,
they lost their two best players.
I didn't get a chance to speak on this. Let me just ask you real quickly. I know we want to move along, but real quickly, you have to admit, the dumbest coaching move of the year is to keep your best player in the game when you're up 10 in the last 2 minutes of the game.
It's a tough situation. You could knock him for that.
Oh, my God.
You could knock him for that. But I will say this. I mean, Tom Thibodeau is a very good coach. He's one of the better coaches in this league. And the Bulls, it was a team that, I mean, Derrick Rose was in and out of the lineup the whole season. But, I mean, even with all that being said, even when Derrick Rose tearing his ACL and everything. They still could have won this series if Joakim Noah was healthy. And I love the Sixers, obviously. Well, I know it's not obvious to you, but let's make it obvious. I love the Sixers. But I will say this. I will definitely say this. I thought if Noah was there, the Bulls probably win that series. Obviously, if Derrick Rose is there, they win that series. But, I mean, you look at it, and it's just – I guess you could rip Thibodeau in that for that situation. But I think, you know, anything could happen. And you don't want to coach scared. And so, I mean, I guess you can rip him for it. But I will say this, the Chicago Bulls, obviously the moment Derrick Rose went down, the season was over in terms of winning the championship. But in terms of going a round or two in these playoffs, they could have did that if Noah was healthy in this series. But, hey, things happen. Injuries happen. And I want to switch gears now. I want to talk about a guy that we're going to about to bring on, a guy who many believe is the future of the heavyweight division, an American heavyweight who hits hard and has a lot of promise and shown a lot of ability. And we're going to bring him in now. Let's bring him in now. Now, heavyweight contender, the one, the only, Seth Mitchell. Seth, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And Seth, first off, you were in Las Vegas for Mayweather-Cotto. Great fight, by the way. Your thoughts on what you saw on Saturday night?
I thought it was a great fight as well. It went pretty much as I expected. I thought it would be a tough fight, a competitive fight, but I figured Mayweather would win in a unanimous decision, or might even stop them late. I predicted if there was a stoppage around 9 to 10. But, you know, Cotto's my favorite fighter, but I said from the beginning he was going up against the best fighter, and, you know, I figured it would play out as it did.
And Mayweather maybe could have stopped him in that 12th if he really wanted to. It seemed like he backed off there.
I mean, I think Cotto's, you know, he's a warrior, and, you know, Mayweather will go in there and get the job done, and if he can finish you, you know, he'll finish you. But at the same time, he knew that, you know, Cotto, he could land a big side or whatever, and he just did what he had to do. But overall, I thought it was a great fight. Nobody really, I mean, Cotto lost, but, you know, everybody, their stock still stayed the same.
Right. And Seth, let's talk about you now. You're coming off an impressive third-round TKO of Chaz Witherspoon. He had you in deep waters, but you survived. How much does going through those deep waters help you moving forward?
It helps me. It helps me a lot. You know, I've never been in that situation before, and I've told people in interviews that if you had asked me how I would have responded, that's how I would have told you I would have responded. But until you get put in that situation, you know, you really don't know. And I was just happy that I was able to weather the storm, but I take my head off the chest. He came out in the first round, and you know, the first minute and a half, it was a, you know, good competitive round, but like the last minute and a half, he pretty much gave me a butt whooping and you know, had me dazed. But I kept my composure. You know, I grabbed, I held on, I survived the first round, and then I came out there and I dictated. I wanted to stay close. I wanted to work the body, and he couldn't deal with it, and I eventually got him out of there.
And let's talk about your body punching. I mean, you go to the body like no other. You made great investments to the body in that particular fight against Witherspoon. Talk about your commitment to going to the body.
It's natural for me. You know, I consider myself a good body puncher, and, you know, I believe in it. I absolutely believe in, you know, if you can get caught with a good hand shot and you can weather the storm. You know, as I did in the first round, if you get caught and you don't get knocked out, you know, you can weather the storm. But you get caught with the right body shot, it'll stick with you for the whole fight, and it'll eventually slow you down. And so, you know, I've had that experience in sparring where, you know, I got caught with a couple of good body shots, and, you know, I felt it throughout the course of sparring, and then even felt it, you know, 2-3 weeks later. So I understand that if you invest in the body, it can pay out big dividends, and that's what it is. So, and it's something that I like. I like punching to the body, and it just comes natural for me.
And, Seth, we've heard many stories on why you actually chose boxing. But why did you actually choose boxing?
The story that you heard were true. I never thought about boxing before. I always told people that I could fight, you know, but my last fight was eighth grade, you know, fifth street fight that I've been in was eighth grade, so it wasn't like I was a troublemaker or anything, but I knew, you know, I never, even though I was like a kind of, you know, big guy, whenever, you know, I didn't want to wrestle. I wanted to throw my hands, so I always knew that, you know, I could fight a little bit with my hands, and I saw Tom Zbikowski have success in his pro debut, and he just inspired me because we were, you know, like collegiate-level athletes, and I played against him every year. And so I just said, okay, hell, if he could do it, I can do it, and the rest is history.
We're talking to heavyweight contender Seth Mitchell. And, Seth, you were a big-time linebacker at Michigan State. Before your injury, how legitimate were your chances to make the NFL?
I think they were good. You know, I think I definitely would have got drafted first day, hands down, you know. I was good. I mean, and the thing about it is, I was never healthy when I played at Michigan State. The best I was about 85%. And if you go back and you listen to people talk about me now as a football player, you would think I was like all world and everything. I mean, sports, athletics, competing is my gift. And I've always stood out. I've always stood out. One of my position coaches told me at 75%, I'm better than what we have here at 100%.
Wow. And that's high praise.
So it's high praise, you know, and I truly believe that I would have heard my name called somewhere on the first day.
Do you miss the game of football?
I miss the team camaraderie.
Okay.
You know, boxing is a lonely sport. I have a great team behind me, but when it's all said and done, I'm in that ring by myself.
Right.
You know, so it's a lonely sport, you know, but the team camaraderie, I miss that. You know, I play basketball and football in high school, and then football at the collegiate level. So I've always been around, surrounded amongst teammates.
Okay. And what do you take from football that helps you in the sport of boxing?
The only thing that I can honestly say that I take is my ability to cut the ring off. Because playing middle linebacker, having to scrape and having to run at angles to get to those running backs, that and being able to take instruction from my corner within that minute and go back out there and implement it during the next round. Because in football, we'll practice formations. We might say this whole week, 85% of the time when they line up in this formation, they're going to run X, Y, and Z. You know that. They're religious with it. And then you go out there game day, and they line up in that formation, and then they run something totally different. Then you come back to the sideline, and the coach puts the formation up on the board and say, forget about everything that we worked last week. This is what they're doing. Now you got to go out there and implement it and execute. And so I think me already having experience that in football to be able to say, okay, we worked on this, but you got to do this, go out there and get it done. I think that's it's had some carryover in boxing.
And what sport is harder for you? You talked about you have the gift of athletics, but what sport is harder for you, boxing or football?
Boxing, hands down, is mentally more tougher.
Okay.
You know, mentally it's just tougher. You know, you can't, when you get tired, you can't. Like football, if I coach to go hard, and when you get tied to the helmet, and I'm going to send in a sub for you, it's none of that in boxing.
Right.
You know, and a play only lasts, you know, two to three seconds max. In football, then you get a 35-second break. It's none of that. You got to go hard for a minute. I mean, hard for 3 minutes, and then you get a rep for a minute. So mentally, it's definitely tougher.
Now, Seth, right now, 24-0, you're slated to return in September. The talk has been it might be Michael Grant. Do you have an opponent at this point?
Don't have an opponent at this point. I should have a date. I don't even know when I'm fighting again, but I should know by the end of this week, hopefully. And I'm 25-0.
25-0. I got that wrong. You were 24-0 before Witherspoon. Now you're 25-0. My bad. And looking at it now, Seth, we're talking to Seth Mitchell, heavyweight contender. Now, Seth, I mean, when you talk about the heavyweight division, you got to talk about the Klitschko brothers, Vitaly, Vladimir. How many fights do you think you're away from challenging these guys?
I would say about no more than three or four fights away, and hopefully I can get my opportunity. Just have to have the right opponents and, you know, face them height, things of that nature. And I believe that I would have earned my opportunity to face the champions that they are.
And Seth, we talked about it, you're 25-0. What do you need at this point to get better? Well, what do you think you need to improve on?
I need to improve on my defense, and that's pretty much. Finishing my combination. Even when I watched this last fight, if you go back and watch the finish on Chaz, I hit him with the first right hand, and then if I would have came back with my left hook, it would have been a KO instead of a TKO.
Okay.
You know, he definitely, if you go back to what, I mean, it was wide open. It was just so clean because he was dazed. He was, like, out on his feet with the right hand.
Right.
And, I mean, he was right there for the left hook. But just finishing my combinations. I hate when I go back and I watch my tablet. Like, oh, man. Because that could have been, like, say if, you know, if he had got out of that round and then he had came back and, you know, two or three rounds there had stopped me or something.
Right.
You know, I can go back and look at that and say, man, if I would have came back with that hook right there, the fight would have been over. So you
right.
can't take it for granted. You have to, when you have those opportunities and those moments, those good seconds, you have to follow through and you have to finish. So just finishing up on my combination, tightening up on my defense. But, you know, my jab, my speed, my body work, you know, I think, you know, you can always get better at those things, but I'm pretty solid on those areas. But I think my combination punching and tightening up on my defense.
And, Seth, on the show, we like to play a game called What Feels Better. I'll give you two things. You tell me what feels better. You ready to play?
I'm ready.
A touchdown or a KO? What feels better?
Come on now, KO all day.
A KO feels better than a touchdown?
Okay, now, yeah, I've hit game-winning shots in basketball. I've knocked off helmets. I've intercepted passes to run it back for touchdowns to win the game. I've broken collarbones. I stopped people on 4th and 1. But the jubilation that I get, the adrenaline rush that I get when I stretch somebody, there's no comparison.
Better feeling, a vicious body shot or a de-cleating type of hit?
What did the body shot do?
It crippled him, but it didn't end the fight. A knockdown.
Probably be a vicious hit.
A vicious hit, okay.
A vicious hit, yeah. Those feel good, too.
And finally, Seth, the possibility of winning a Super Bowl or becoming undisputed heavyweight champion.
That's no comparison. Heavyweight champion, that's an individual sport. You know, to walk around and say that you're the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, that's hands down, no-brainer.
Definitely. And I mean, I guess you're right. I mean, that would be a good feeling. Like you said, individual. You don't have to share it with anybody. That's your belt.
Right.
Seth, where can fans connect with you?
Fans can get on Facebook at Seth Mitchell and on Twitter at SethMayhem48.
All right, fans, make sure you go.
I answer my tweets. I run my own Twitter. I answer my tweets. So, you know, if y'all send some, I don't answer craziness, though. That's a disclaimer. I don't answer craziness. You know, you have, it's crazy because I have people that follow me that are my supporters, and I have haters that follow me that be talking all type of noise. And just to let y'all know, when you talk noise and craziness, I don't even respond.
And that's the best way to do it, because if you don't respond, they'll stop.
Right.
Seth, man, it was a pleasure talking to you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. And let's do this again.
You said what? I hear you.
I said, we wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward, and let's do this again.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, man. Just, you know how to get in contact with me, so just let's make it happen.
Now, heavyweight contender, Seth Mitchell. Pleasure talking to him. I mean, he is the future of the heavyweight division at this point. He is the future, the American future of the heavyweight division. I mean, this is a guy who played football, came from football, and went to boxing. He's ferocious. He's vicious. And he's a very aggressive boxer, got the power. So he doesn't have everything. But we'll see what happens when he goes up against the Klitschko brothers, if he can get to that point. And that's going to be – the Klitschkos are the heavyweight division. They are the heavyweight division. And those are the people you need to get through if you want to be heavyweight champion of the world. And we'll see. We'll see. Definitely has the power. Definitely seems like he has the heart and the dedication.
Well, his, I mean, we saw, Paul, his question will wind up being, can he, does he certainly have, you know, the quick ability in 2 or 3 fights to get to that level? He was,
and
we saw that. It was a huge power. But, and maybe can he get him at the end of his career and be, like you said, an American, take it back the belt. But he was very impressive, and he had mentioned it. He likes hitting the bodies, and he's a big guy, and he came out hard, and it should be interesting. Finally, after almost a decade, to see somewhat at least of note in the heavyweight division.
We'll see what happens with Seth Mitchell moving forward. Let's bring in a guy who is also impressive, a guy who is prepared to take that next step in New Orleans. The one, the only, Johnny Patrick. Johnny, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us, Johnny. And, Johnny, let's get right down to it. NBA playoffs in full swing right now. I got to ask, who's your team?
I had 2 teams, Chicago Bulls, that went down with Derrick Rose went down.
And it
was heartbreaking, and right now I'm riding with Miami.
Okay, so the Bulls are your number one team?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And I, full disclosure here, Johnny, I'm a lifelong Philadelphia 76ers fan, so I kind of enjoyed what happened the other day.
Oh, yeah, man, it was disappointing, man. But you know, we both know, if Derrick Rose was playing, it would not have went down like that.
You might be right. You might be right there. I also argued here that if Noah didn't go down, you guys still probably could have won that series.
Yeah, you might. Yeah, that's right. I mean, we had some disappointing injuries, and I mean, they always have next year, so we're just gonna look forward to next year and compete then.
And Johnny, right now the Saints, some issues going on there. A couple of your leaders, Jonathan Vilma suspended for a year, Will Smith suspended 4 games. Were you surprised by the length of the suspensions?
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone was surprised. And right now, the NFLPA and the guys are trying to work on kind of uplifting that. And I mean, we still have a lot of leaders on our team, and we're going to move past that. So right now, it was very shocking for us. And I mean, we still speak to those guys. So right now, we're just trying to see what happens.
And you're also the situation with you guys. You're going to be missing your coach, Sean Payton. And I mean, obviously, Sean Payton is one of the better coaches in this league. How much do you think you guys will miss him in 2012?
Oh, man, I miss him already, and I only played a year under him. He's probably one of the best coaches I played in all my career of football. I've been playing since I was 6 years old.
Wow.
I learned a lot from him within, like, 7 to 8 months when I did my whole career. So, I mean, we're going to miss him, but just like Coach Payton would say, this is a player-driven league, and he's going to still be behind us. He's going to be our coach, hopefully, after the suspension is lifted, and we're going to keep moving forward and fight for him.
Right, and hopefully you guys can continue to fight for Joe Vitt, as he will be your coach, interim coach this year. And also, I mean, right now, Greg Williams, obviously he's gone. You got a new defensive coordinator, Steve Spagnuolo. He coached the Super Bowl-winning defense with the Giants many years ago. How much does he help the defense in 2012? You guys did struggle last season.
He's going to bring an aggressive mindset. He's going to bring some new things to the table right now. It's a big learning curve. He's a good coach. That I've been seeing so far that we've been meeting with him and stuff. He has a lot of energy, and he's going to bring excitement to the defense, and hopefully it'll make a change for a better.
And looking at it right now, Johnny, last year you had a lockout shortened season. You didn't have an opportunity of a full off season. You got to be excited to have that full off season this year.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, because, I mean, the off season gives us time to get to know the coaches better, the coaches know us better, and get an opportunity to compete better. This year is going to be better because the OTAs are going to be starting soon, and you get a chance to showcase your ability before all the other guys, like, just get wheeled in, like, you're not just throwing the fire when, like, camp is coming and you're, like, behind the pillar. So this is going to be good for me to get a lot of OTAs in.
We're talking to cornerback Johnny Patrick for the New Orleans Saints. And, Johnny, you contributed a lot on special teams last year. But coming into this year, a lot of people are talking to you as a possible starter. How have you prepared to take your game to that next level?
Honestly, I was prepared last year. I was ready for anything to come up. We got this philosophy in our meeting, the next man up. So, I was ready for anything that came about last year. It was a numbers thing. We had great corners. Everybody was healthy. I was just in the learning curve last year. So, anything that happened last year I was ready for, anything that's going to happen this year I'm ready for.
And, Johnny, one thing you're known for is your physical play. You're 5'11", 190 pounds, but you play hard and you lay the wood. Talk about that physical part of your game.
Oh, man, I love coming up and hitting people, man. There's nothing better than that. That's football, and that's what we grew up to do. If you love the game, that's what you love to do. So I love coming up being physical and just having that. It's exciting. It's exciting to be on the field and do that.
We're talking to New Orleans Saints cornerback Johnny Patrick as he prepares for the upcoming 2012 season. And, Johnny, you look at now, last week you had Junior Seau commit suicide. You're having other older players dealing with the after effects of playing football and concussions. You're young in football right now, but do you think about that at all?
Not at all. I'm pretty sure those guys had things going on in their life, and I know I'm not really the person to speak on that or what was going on, but it's sad, it's devastating to see those players going through that. But right now I'm young, so I'm going to stay young and I'm going to be playing football.
And you look at it, I mean, Johnny, big, big year for you, obviously, your second year. You want to take that next step. What can we expect from Johnny Patrick in 2012?
It's a lot of emotion on the field, a lot of excitement. I'm going to bring a lot of energy to the team. I'm going to help as much as I can. Still on special teams also, because special teams is important, more than defense or offense, if anybody doesn't understand that. So there's a lot of excitement, man. A lot of energy to bring to the team.
And we talked about it, the situation with Sean Payton. We talked about the situation with Jonathan Vilma, Will Smith. But is this still a Super Bowl contending team?
I honestly feel that way. We still have a great leader in Drew Brees. I mean, guy, he's a great guy. You got that guy on your team, anything's possible. So right now we're going to take one game at a time, and we're going to still focus on our goals just like any other NFL team, and that's getting to the Super Bowl. So right now that is not our lead. We have a lot of adversity going on right now, but we're going to get over it. So we're still working hard right now. Nobody's down. Everybody's still working. So, yes, we are still going to be fighting for the Super Bowl.
And, Johnny, Mother's Day weekend, what can Mama Patrick expect for a gift on this Mother's Day, tomorrow's Mother's Day?
That's kind of – I actually was raised by my dad. I didn't really have my mother in my life. So
okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay, but you know, I'm gonna try to figure something out with somebody, maybe a special fan or something. But something will be coming.
Johnny, where can fans connect with you?
I got a Twitter at JohnnyPatrick32, and I got a Facebook fan page that's getting built right now. I had one got taken down because of some issues, but got that coming also. But right now at Twitter at JohnnyPatrick32.
And, Johnny, I remember speaking to you a year ago, and there was a party for you. Welcome to New Orleans for Johnny Patrick. How is living in New Orleans for you?
It's good, man. The fans are amazing, man. They show a lot of support, even right now as we're going through this situation. But I love living here. The food is amazing. the events that they have are amazing. I love jazz, so I love the jazz sets and saying the things that go down here. So, I mean, I like it.
Right, right. And so you're in New Orleans. You've obviously made the adjustment, and you're ready for a big 2012.
Oh, yeah, yes, sir.
Johnny, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck in the 2012 season, and let's do this again.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
You too.
Johnny Patrick, corner for the New Orleans Saints. And the New Orleans Saints, a lot of adversity, a lot of things going on there in Saints land. And he says that he thinks they can overcome it. And it's going to be a lot. It's truly going to be a lot for them to overcome it. I mean, it's going to be a lot for them to overcome no Sean Payton, the possibility of no Jonathan Vilma, one of the leaders on your defense, missing Will Smith for four games. Just all the distractions around New Orleans. It's going to be interesting to see how they handle it. I'm looking forward to seeing how the Saints really handle it. I say they're still a playoff team, but I question whether they're a Super Bowl team, especially without Sean Payton. You're talking about one of the better coaches in this league.
Well, Paul, I mean, honestly, though, I mean, I think Sean Payton probably, I'll say this, Sean Payton matters more than Jonathan Vilma, who was injured at parts last year and didn't play as much, and I mean, more. I think more is made of Roma because of the fact of his suspension than of his value. But if you really want to be honest, I mean, this was the same team offensively last year that struggled, I think, more so than anything. So if they get their, if they find their offensive groove back, certainly I think Sean Payton, yeah, I agree with you. He's one of the elite coaches in the league. He will definitely, there's no way he will not be missed. But they offensively put their pieces together, and I think they will be more surprising than people think. Mainly because I think, you know, Paul, I look at this and I say, if I'm Drew Brees and, you know, if I'm on the Saints team, I'm a player, I'm really angry. Because I think the coaching side of all this, maybe you understand, but the way it was handled, I mean, maybe the league in and of themselves could have done a better job with regards to some of the player stuff. I think that we talk about this almost every week. The players, I think, got the, you know, the tough end of the stick here. And to lose a coach for 16 games, you know, Goodell walks himself, I think, into a corner because you really he's becoming an ultra disciplinarian.
And I said this last week, and I thought, you know what, here's the way I viewed this situation. I don't think these players should have got suspended. And I'll tell you why. The team, the organization was warned by Goodell. They were warned by Goodell to knock it off, right? So if the organization meaning the ownership, general manager, coaches, if the organization continues to have a system in place, if an organization is still, you know, in some respect, endorsing it, alleged bounties by letting the whole situation go on and not stopping it, then to me, who is culpable here? I thought the message was already sent. You sent the message already by suspending Peyton for a year, by suspending Mickey Loomis for 8 games, by suspending Joe Vitt for 6 games, by getting rid of a couple of the draft picks, the couple second-round picks this year and next year. You made the point. The point is already made. Okay, you know, we know that you're going to be tough on this issue. Point taken, we're not going to do it. I don't think anybody in the league is not going to do it. Again, and if they do it, they're going to find a better way to hide it. But again, and plus also you look at it from this standpoint as well. Obviously, this type of thing has been going on in the game of football for years. And I referenced Buddy Ryan and Louis Zendejas. I believe that was 1988. And also you had the situation, Charles Martin for the Green Bay Packers, when he slammed down Jim McMahon. If you remember that situation, on his towel there, he had names. He basically had a bounty. He had names of people that he wanted to injure. That's a bounty. So I say to myself, this kind of stuff has been going on for a long time. Yes, you want to stop it. Yes, you want to send a message. But you sent the message already. You sent the message to Peyton. You sent the message to Vitt. You sent the message to Loomis. You sent the message with the draft picks. How many more messages do you need to send? The message is already sent. We get that this is, you don't want this to happen. We get that. We get it. We understand your point. You made your point already. You look at Jonathan Vilma, could be suspended a year now. And that's a year's pay, and that's a year off his football life. And the football life don't last forever. It's not a long life at all. So the reality is this. And what I mean, the football life, I'm talking more so the football in the NFL career. So the thing about it is this. You sent the message, Roger. You sent the message. You don't need to go any further with it. Point taken. We understand. We get the message. I don't think it's necessary to suspend these players. I really don't. I think the message has been sent. We get it.
Well, I think, and that was, you know, the broader point, too, and that's my question, where do you go from here? Meaning, you know, he walks himself into this extreme, as you mentioned, what is a bounty now for an NFL player? Because I think, you know, and it took a lot of guts for Chris Carter to come out and really
right.
say that this notion of the bounty, like you mentioned, it's been around, it's going to be there this year. There will be players who will, you know, want to look at good players and try to see if they could get him underneath the pile, and if so, can we, how can we, you know, twist an arm and do this and do that? So where's the end game here? And I think that was the one thing I'm critical of Goodell for is guidance. I think that there was a lot of guidance, I will say, for head coaches and the ownership, general managers, and the coordinators. For the players, there was little to none. And so to that end, why is a Jonathan Vilma, for example, I mean, to say he may have been the ringleader, well, he's no more of a ringleader in regards than Chris Carter is saying that he was a ringleader when he played. And to think that it ends now blanket-wide, league-wide, is a joke. To think that there will not be a situation, game, preseason game one of the 2012-2013 season is absurd. Go ahead.
I just think, you know, I'm not calling anybody criminals, but what happens is when you stop certain things, criminals become better at what they do. Let's look at your house, for example. You had a security system, criminals start to become better in terms of trying to break the security system. You add a virus control, some kind of virus control to your computers, hackers find a better way to hack your computers. And I think that's what we're going to see here. You're going to see a situation where organizations, players, coaches, so on and so forth, are going to find better ways to manipulate the system. I don't think this ends bounties in football, if you want to call them bounties, reward systems, so on and so forth. I don't think this ends it. I just think the reality is I think players, coaches, organizations are going to be a little more sophisticated in how they do things. And this doesn't end it. I don't think it ends it. But, I mean, the thing with the NFL now and the reality is now in the game of football with everything that's going on with the concussions and players, the Dorsons, the Andre Waters of the world, Junior Seau's, we don't know if Junior Seau's death is connected to CTE. But the thing is, with all these things going on now, the NFL had to react. And I understand why he did it. I understand why he did it. And from that standpoint, a business corporate standpoint, a standpoint that you're trying to protect players, a standpoint that you want to clean up the game, I understand from that standpoint. But from a standpoint of sending messages and all the other stuff, the message was sent. The message was already sent. We got the message already. I mean, how many more messages do you want to send? You sent the message. Let these guys be able to earn their money. I mean, Jonathan Vilma, he's losing a year's worth of salary. It's hard to get back a year in terms of football, in terms of your football career. There's only a small window to make X amount of dollars. That is hard to get back. It's hard to get that back. So you hate to see guys lose a year worth of pay. I mean, it's just you hate to see it in any walk of life. And I just think, you know, you made your point. The point has already been made with Peyton, with it, and so on and so forth. You made your point. I don't see why you need to add on. I understand why you did it, and from the standpoint where you're coming from or I think you're coming from, I really can't argue because, again, with all these lawsuits coming out with the concussions and everything, it's almost like you had to do something, but I feel like at the same time, you have already did something. You already done something. You already took care of that aspect of the game. It was already done. It's done is done. You know what I mean? That's just the way I view this whole thing.
I still go back to, like you say, I mean, from his perspective, my only question is where are they where does he want the players to know where the line is? It was very clear when they talk about the hits in the NFL, you know, defensive, offensive, a defensive hitter. I mean, they made it known where they set lines and what their limits were. Here, though, I mean, these bounties have lived on and lived on. And I think, and that's why I say I congratulate a player like Chris Carter to come out and show, I think, fans at every level of the game, you know, what a bounty really was defined as, which it was far, I think, less than what the NFL has made this situation out to be. Chris Carter explains that basically a bounty could just be someone like Bill Romanowski who runs his mouth who players don't know when he's being serious and when he's not. And offensive, like the comments of where offensive linemen are paid, you know, and given gifts at the end of seasons to protect their quarterback. I mean, so when another angry player goes to the league and dimes everyone out the way apparently Jeremy Shockey did.
Allegedly.
Well, I mean, we haven't seen hide your hair of that man. So I think.
I mean, Warren Sapp did say that's who his sources are telling him the snitch is, but we don't know. I mean,
when a snitch goes into hiding, one thing we know is when a rat goes underneath of a rock, you know why.
Well, he did come out and say that he denied it. I've seen numerous tweets from him where he denied, and he's also talked about that he would take a lie detector. At least that's what he tweeted, that he would take a lie detector test. So he has said something in response. So I don't know if he was the snitch or not, but, you know, if you want to get into that whole situation, Warren Sapp a snitch for snitching out the snitch. And
come on.
So, I mean, you know. Yeah, but are you a hero for snitching out the snitch? If you're snitching out the snitch, aren't you a snitch as well?
We gotta find where they live. You know what I mean? We gotta find out where they live. And
yeah, but I mean, my thing is, if I snitch out the snitch, then that makes me a snitch as well. So we're all snitches.
No. You gotta find that guy, and you certainly want to make sure that he knows, you know, to stay underneath his rock and to watch his back, you know, because people don't like, you know, anybody going and crying to their mommies and their daddies and their uncles and their aunts, Goodells, you know, please save me. That's BS.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, I don't, you know, who knows? Who knows how it all came out, whether Shockey was the snitch, and who knows? But, I mean, the thing about it is I made this equation, this comparison. Also, I talked about this last week. You weren't on, but I'm going to repeat myself. I think this whole bounty thing is kind of the thing in terms of your job. And everybody has those things at their job that you can get away with. Technically speaking, you probably are not supposed to be doing it, but you can get away. Let's look at the in terms of the computer, people on the computers. You're probably not allowed to go on Facebook or Twitter on your computer at work, but people do it all the time. And a lot of people get away with it. A lot of people, it's not really a problem in terms of that. But, I mean, the thing about it, if you get caught or something happens, then you get in trouble. And the chances, you can definitely get in trouble. And I think that's what happens here. I think that's what's happening here. I think bounties are a part of the game. It's been a big part of the game for many, many years. The reality is the Saints just happen to get caught being on Twitter, happen to get caught being on Facebook. I mean, they just happen to get caught. And then that's it. I mean, they got caught. And that's I think everybody did it. Everybody does it. But the thing about it is, it's the ones who get caught are the ones who get in trouble, and that's what happened to the New Orleans Saints. They got caught, and if you look at it, they got caught at the wrong time. And what I mean by that, with all these lawsuits, with the concussions, with all this research coming out about concussions and everything, it's just bad timing. And you wonder if let's just say the Saints got caught 5 years ago, would they've gotten this same type of penalty? I would say probably not. I don't think they would have necessarily gotten the same type of penalty.
Well, I disagree. I'll say this, Paul. I think from an coaching administrative standpoint, they would have had to. Because I think the players know it was a different player league. It was just starting 5 years ago. You know, with Goodell and the mindset that I've said this now for too long, over 2 years on this show, Paul. Kudos to that man for coming in. And, I mean, making what was a juggernaut. I mean, these players today are worthless. He can bring in anyone, in my opinion, and make this league run. But the administration, Paul, absolutely not. I mean, you even go back to Tagliabue. There's no way the game would have let a team knowingly, because it was the documents that sunk that organization. And the breadth of them, the girth of them, it was politically pulp.
But the audio tapes, I mean, let's be real. I'm saying my point is this. If those audio tapes would have came out 5 years ago, I don't think it would have. I don't think the organization would have got punished the way the organization's gotten punished. I don't think so. Because I don't think the uproar is not the same about the concussion issue. The concussion issue is a kind of a recent issue in a lot of ways.
You're talking about
the last 2 to 3 years where they started really doing things in terms of concussions and mandating certain type of things. This is kind of a new phenomenon in a lot of ways. I don't think they would have got the same type of penalties if this happened 5 years ago. I think the organization probably would have just gotten a fine. And if this was under Commissioner Tagliabue, who wasn't as hard as Goodell, who knows what kind of – I mean, maybe nothing would have happened. I mean, because you look at it, you remember the situation with Leonard Little where he had the drunk driving accident, he killed someone. I believe he only got suspended 8 games. That was under Commissioner Tagliabue. But then you have a situation with Dante Stallworth and his situation. He lost a year. You have Michael Vick with the dog fighting. He lost some time as well, lost a year. I mean, pretty much 2 years in a lot of ways. So this commissioner is tough on, you know, things off the field. But I will say this, and I think the players made a big, big mistake in their negotiation this time around in terms of not making Roger Goodell the judge, the jury, and the executioner.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was just – you cannot – give that type of power to one person and expect to be happy with it, because it's just that one person's judgment. I mean, he's hearing appeals and things of that nature, and now this appeal, they're trying to get it where someone else will hear it, but we'll see how that pans out for the players. But I mean, the thing about it is obviously the owners really wanted that, and the owners probably gave up something in order to get something like that, but I just don't think you can. That was a wise move by the players to let that slide by, to not fight for that more. I mean, you cannot. I mean, this is a tough situation. You're talking about Vilma, who possibly could be, like I said, who possibly could lose a year's salary, and also possibly, I mean, not possibly. I mean, well, possibly lose a year off his football career. So. I mean, and football is a game where you only have X amount of time to make X amount of money. So, I mean, I don't know. But I just thought giving him that type of power and making him the judge, the jury, and the executioner is a mistake that the players made in terms of collectively, during the collective bargaining situation. So, negotiations, I should say. So, I mean, Goodell has the power. He does have the power.
Well, he earned it. I mean, he's done a remarkable job of, I think, showing the owners what $20 million a year is going to get them, and that is a league of order and dominate. I mean, he dominates this league, I think, more so than I would dare I say, not just any commissioner, but all commissioners in memory. I mean, he has become the league.
Well, I mean, he's gotten the power, and, you know, I mean, you could make the argument that he's done a great job of cleaning up the game in a lot of ways, cleaning up some of the things. I mean, you're right. I mean, the reality, you cannot be acting a fool off the field and expect to be playing on the field. This is a business, and a business that's about image and marketing. And it gets difficult to market guys if guys are out there doing and acting a fool. So, yes, in that standpoint, I mean, you understand why he's doing it. There needs to be a code of conduct. There needs to be a way that you live and a way you conduct yourself. There needs to be that. You can't argue with that, but, I mean, he's not always right. I'll say that. And being that he hears appeals in some respect, if you're suspended by him for 16 games, what would be any different? Maybe he woke up and had some different type of breakfast, or maybe he ate a little something different that made him happier, and in the process of making him happier, he decided to reduce your penalty. I mean, what else can you want? He ate his favorite Jell-O in the morning, and maybe that'll change some things. I mean, I don't know. You know, but one person is not always right all the time, and Roger Goodell, he is a commissioner, but he is not God. And in some respect, when you're judge, jury, executioner, and you become godlike, and in some respect, Roger Goodell, in a lot of ways, and becomes a godlike figure because he can make a decision, and you got to go back to him if you have an issue with the decision that he made. And if he sticks by his decision, then you're screwed and there's nothing else you can do. I thought this was America, people. But again, that is the situation. We're going to bring in now Chris Hope, a free agent safety, a guy who's preparing. He's got a big charity event coming up next week, and we're going to bring him in now. Let's bring him in now. Let's bring it now. Free agent safety, the one, the only, Chris Hope. Chris, how are you, sir?
Doing pretty good. Can't complain.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, man.
And Chris, you got a big charity basketball game coming up. The NBA playoffs are going on right now. Any observations from the playoffs at this point for you?
I'm a LeBron James and Dwayne Wade fan.
Okay.
I'm a little scared of Oklahoma City, though, because, you know, they're a talented group. And I want LeBron to win a ring, win his first ring, and hopefully he can win a few. But if he doesn't, I know it's a group of young men down in Kansas City who are chomping at the bit. And you know, they're young, and they're real serious about what they're doing. So, you know, if he doesn't get one real fast, it's going to be trouble for him.
And I agree with you. I mean, you're right. I think ultimately he has to get one soon, but I think they'll get it this year. It's just too much talent, too much LeBron, too much Wade, too much Chris Bosh, all that talent on the floor at one time. They're going to win it this year. They have to.
I hope so. You know, just to get the mic off his back. You know, LeBron's
right.
A good guy. You know, D Wade's a hard worker, even though he's already had a chance to win a ring. But again, you know, I'm pulling for him. I hope it happens. And, you know, sometimes, you know, a lot of great talent comes through the league at the wrong time. You know, all the
right.
greats that came through with Michael Jordan era, you know, they just couldn't win one because Mike was there. So now I think Durant, Westbrook, Harden, Ibaka, you know, if you don't have a chance, if you don't go ahead and get one now, all those guys are still gelling. It's going to be tough if they can stay together.
You're right. I mean, that's a great point. I mean, they have a young nucleus with all those guys. But Miami ain't going nowhere. I mean, with all that talent, they're not going anywhere. And I think they get it done this year. I definitely think they get it done this year. I'd be shocked if they didn't.
Yeah, that would be – I think Dwayne Wade said it would be this season if they don't win the championship this year. So wait and see.
And, Chris, let's go to you now. Tough year for you in 2011. You missed six games with a forearm injury. You ultimately lost your starting job. But what happened overall for you in 2011?
It was a blessing. You know, I've played the game of football since I've been 7 years old. And, you know, for most kids, they learn the game as they go along. But I was blessed with God-given ability to know the game right away. And, you know, some of the hits and some of the plays I made as a kid, some guys make those plays in high school and in college, and they pan out to be a great player. But I was blessed again to always be one of the best players. And playing from 7 years old, and now I'm 31, and, you know, not missing practices, not missing games, you know, starting playing varsity when I was 13 years old in the ninth grade and never missing a game and playing both ways most of the time. You know, some of those hits caught up with me, but I was fortunate enough to just get a little small injury to the forearm, nothing serious. And it gave me a chance to sit back and heal and get a break from the game of football. And fortunate enough, I still got paid and paid pretty well. But when I came back to the lineup, I don't think you lose your job to injury. And you know, that's over and done with now. So I'm not going to cry over milk that's already spoiled. So I feel like, you know, it was a learning experience, you know, I still know I can play the game at a high level because when I came and I split time, getting in series, playing here and there, I made plays and I was myself again, you know. But, again, I thank God for giving me the opportunity just to have that rest, you know, that red shirt. You know, I didn't red shirt in college, so I've always been playing right away and playing a lot of minutes. So, you know, it was an opportunity for me to sit back and rest. And now going into free agency and experiencing this from a whole different viewpoint than the first time when I was a free agent coming off a winning Super Bowl team, being 24, being one of the top hot faces in the league, and now You know, I'm a veteran guy, still well-known, still well-respected around the league. But coming from a team that didn't make the playoffs, coming from a team that didn't have one of the top defenses in the league, and also coming off injury. So, you know, the odds are stacked against me, but I wouldn't be okay if it was easy.
Right, and you talked about, I read an article about you. You were talking about you were in the best shape of your life. Talk about that.
Well, you have a chance to get away from the game of football and just train and not get hit. Again, that's unreal, you know, because most guys that are right in the middle of playing football in their careers, they're training every day, they're practicing every day, and then they get hit on Sunday. And I had the opportunity to sit back away from the game and really focus on the things that I need to focus on being, you know, when you're doing season, you don't work on a lot of speed work. You know, that's all the off season. You know, you work on all that stuff during the off season and getting stronger, faster, in the best shape of your life. And then when you get to training camp, everything is slowed down. You don't have a chance to run as much as you did during the off season. You don't lift as much or heavy as you did in the off season. And you don't work on the little things that make you fast and the things that you worked on when you was coming out of college going into the combine. So now I've had that opportunity to do all those things and heal in the midst of it. So that's what I mean. I'm stronger. I'm faster. You know, I'm more flexible. All the things that, you know, the draining process of football, you know, 3 days of practice a week. You know, the brutal game on Sunday, recovering and doing it all again, I had a chance to sit back and not go through that for one time in my life.
And, Chris, the Titans, they re-signed Jordan Babineau. They franchised Michael Griffin. At this point, is your time in Tennessee probably over?
I'm not sure. You know, anything can happen. I wouldn't rule out any team. You know, I just know that I believe in myself, and I know I'm still one of the best safeties in the league when I'm healthy. This is the only time that I haven't been healthy. And I feel like, again, God is going to fix it, the right situation for Chris Holt. And, you know, I'm not worried about will I play again, because I know I will. I'm not worried about will I start again, will I play at a high level again. I'm not worried about all those things because I know what I dedicate myself to doing every day. I know what I bring to the table. And sometimes experience is better than athletic ability because, you know, the things you know can sometimes put you in better positions than the things you know how to do. So I'm just patiently waiting. I'm not worried. I've had contact with several teams. They're interested. You know, we just have to make sure everything is lined up for Chris Holt and that I'm listening to God's voice and not people's voice.
And have you? Do you want to specify the teams that you've been in contact with?
Oh, not right now. You know,
okay.
Again, it's not written in stone, so it's not like I'm signing with a team tomorrow. But, you know, again, I've been contacting. My agent is doing a good job of keeping me in the loop. And again, a good thing about it is that teams know. And
okay.
I think the one thing that I would be more frustrated about is that the way my story ended in Tennessee or the way it was perceived. You know, if somebody from the outside looking in is going to say Chris Holt lost his job. And, you know, that's not exactly how it is. You know, sometimes politics and, you know, looking to get younger or looking to see what you have for the next year, all those things play big parts in what goes on into a locker room. You know, from fans, from people on the outside, they have no idea what goes on behind closed doors. But, again, I'm not bitter. I'm not mad at anyone. I just wish that my career in Tennessee would have ended differently and that I would have had an opportunity to be healthy and put my best foot forward going into free agency to show teams that I still can run, I still can play, I still can tackle, and I still can make plays. Now it's in the hands of people assuming or speculating on what happened.
We're talking to free agent safety Chris Hope. And, Chris, I want to switch gears now. A lot has been made of the Saints bounty scandal. A few players were suspended last week, including Jonathan Vilma, who got suspended for a year. Were you surprised by those suspensions?
I was very surprised and shocked about an entire year, you know, being suspended. And, you know, I'm not sure of all the details or, you know, I'm not there with the check signed by, you know, film or giving it to someone. So I don't know the accuracy of the information to be able to make a ruling like that. But I do know Jonathan Vilma is maybe a year or two behind me. And, you know, to take a guy from football for an entire year without pay and, you know, to come back in the game a year older, you never know if he gets a chance to play again or even play at that level again because, you know, it's so much of politics when it comes into the age number and your salary.
Right.
I think that's the one thing I dislike about the game of football on this level. You know, sometimes you have already, coaches and GMs make the decision of what they want to do with a person when it comes to that fact of salary and age before you even get a chance to prove yourself.
Right.
And, you know, in basketball and baseball, they don't have to experience that because their money's guaranteed. You know, so when Kobe Bryant could have lost the step, you know, he hasn't been the same Kobe Bryant, you know, 3-4 years ago. You know, but he still gets it done in his own way. He may not alley-oop or make the sports center plays like he used to every game, but he still can score 30, you know, whether it's that free throws, drawing fouls, or shooting fadeaway jumpers, whatever the case, he still can produce. You know, I haven't heard A-Rod's name in a long time, but he's not cut, he's not traded. In football, he would be cut or traded. You know, Derek Jeter, same thing. He's effective, he's not the same Derek Jeter that he used to be, but in football, because our money isn't guaranteed, he would be cut. You know, you're not going to tell me Hines Ward couldn't be the fifth best receiver on the Pittsburgh Steelers team. There's no way. I can't believe that you got four other receivers that can bring what Hines Ward brings to the game.
Right.
I don't think so. But that's what we have to deal with playing football.
Right, and that's what I was about to say. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. Every team is looking to get younger, but every team is also looking to get cheaper. And that is the thing about
football.
And
that's the problem. If you're an older guy and you're cheaper, you can stay. But if you're an older guy and you're expensive, we can't keep you. We can't use you. But if you're if you're an older guy and you're cheap, you know you're playing great. Oh, he's leading. You know he's been a leader. He's a professional. He's teaching younger guys how to play the game. We need this guy in our locker room. But if he was older and he's expensive, oh, no, he's lost his step. We can't use him. He can't cover. He can't do this anymore without having the footage or the film to back it up.
Right. And Chris, last few weeks, Junior Seau committed suicide. We're hearing the stories of other players, retired players struggling with issues after they retire. And looking at that whole situation, you're a current player now. Does that situation scare you when you hear stories like Junior Seau, Andre Waters, and Dave Dorison?
Most definitely. You know, being a safety, again, I've played since I've been 7 years old, and, you know, I've always been known as a hard hitter, so it just didn't start when I got to middle school or high school. I was hitting kids hard, so I can remember getting stingers as a kid, and not exactly knowing what was going on. But, you know, at a young age, you know, the worst pain you probably would feel being a football player is getting the wind knocked out of you. And that's falling on football. But some guys, you know, that's before their times. You know, I can remember watching Jadeveoni Clowney, you know, the big name prospect for South Carolina, all-world phenom defensive end. You know, he's from my area, and I remember going to one of his games when he was a kid, and he hit someone and it sounded like an NFL hit at that age.
Wow.
So, you know, you don't get those hits back. And being a safety and getting your reputation for hitting hard, you know, that's scary. And, you know, to change, to have health and live to be 80 versus, you know, making millions of dollars and dying at 35 or 40, that doesn't pan out to me. You know, I'm a good football player, but I'm Chris Hope. I'm not football. Football is It's what I do. It's not who I am. So, you know, I wouldn't trade health and life for money or fame for anything.
Right.
So it's definitely scary. And now, you know, listening to those stories and being a vet, and, you know, I've made a lot of money. I've been fortunate enough to play my whole deal out, and I've been smart with my money. And, you know, I was a straight-A student throughout high school and college. You know, I don't have a problem, you know, going and finding work and doing something else with my life. You know, but to have the opportunity to walk away from the game with just minor injuries, you know, forearm and things like that, and just the aches and pains of ankles and knees from all that running. But to have a mind lapse where you can't remember something after being so strong and so powerful and so dominant of an athlete, you know, that's depressing just to think about it.
We're talking to free agent safety Chris Hope. And Chris, you got a big charity event coming up, May 19th, basketball game, big charity game. Talk about that.
Man, that's one of the greatest feelings I have. And, you know, I just thank God that he used me to put me in this driver's seat or put me on this platform to reach not only kids, not only up-and-coming athletes, but everyone from all different age groups. And my thing is, everyone has a story, and coming from my small community, Rock Hill, not big city, where everyone knew everyone and everyone helped everyone when I was coming up, it just inspired me to give back to my community, because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my next-door neighbor watching me when my mom and dad were at work, or someone around the corner telling me to put that rock down or stop cursing, you know, or my teacher that taught my brother, you know, being hard on me and making sure I'm doing my work, and coaches that have coached my cousins and my brother and my mom, and, you know, whatever the connections have been, it hasn't just been Chris Hope to get me here. So now my charity event is community helping community. You know, it's a basketball game where I bring in, you know, some of the NFL's best athletes, some of the NFL's best at their position, from Pro Bowlers to Super Bowl winners, and they come in and we put on a basketball game. You know, all football players think they can play basketball and probably fight, but, you know, we have a good time, and again, the tickets are only $5. You know, okay. People say, well, you know, why can't you just have it free? You know, it's not about me paying the way for everybody, because, again, everybody has a charge to keep. Everybody has an opportunity to plant a seed, you know. And I feel like, you know, $5 is not about the price of the ticket. It's about you helping someone else, because, you know, $5 might seem like, oh, that's a lot of money, or it's not a lot of money until you ask someone for $5 and they say no. So I feel like I gave everyone the opportunity to get involved and help out. You know, you can say, well, Chris didn't put the tournament on. We put the tournament on because we filled the seats. We donated the $5 to help give to Pilgrims Inn, who is the honoree, the guest or the main person that we're contributing to. All the proceeds are going to Pilgrims Inn, a women's shelter in Rock Hill. So,
okay.
And when you leave out of there, you know, not only do you get to see your friends and, you know, old coaches and, you know, meet some of the best NFL players in the league and get autographs and take pictures, but you can walk away and say, I planted the seed today. You know, I helped give back to my community. And, you know, when I'm in a situation, my community going to help give back to me and what I'm going through. So I'm more than overwhelmed for the and joyous about the opportunity to be the one that started it or just the one to get the ball rolling. Because, again, you know, I donate just like they donate. My $5 is better than your $5.
And it's a
great event. Go ahead.
And you talked about the event. Let's talk about your basketball game.
My skills?
Let's talk about your skill set. Yeah, what kind of skills you bring to the table?
Well, you know, back in my day, my first love was basketball. You know, I played AAU and you know, YBOA, and we won national championships. I played with a team in Charlotte called Charlotte Sonics, and we won a championship when I was 10, 11, and 12. But again, my going into my ninth grade year, I got moved up to varsity. So that was the first year that, you know, football was during the summer because I played varsity. And, you know, I started lifting weights. And, you know, one of my coaches came up to me and said, you can forget about that basketball camp that you go to, not the basketball camp, but the basketball tournament that you go to every year. And I said, why? You know, it's only on the weekend. He said, well, you know, count the number of players that's on a basketball team. And I counted them, and then he said, count the number of players that's on a football team.
Right.
And I was pretty good at math, so I told the coach I couldn't make the tournament. And, you know, that was history. I played in high school. You know, I still had a passion for it, played hard. You know, I was all region and all state and all those things. But, you know, I was more focused on the game of football.
Right. And like you said, your charity, your foundation, I See Hope Fund, I mean, you're doing a lot of big things, a lot of great things in the community. Keep it up, Chris. And what kind of players are you going to have at this tournament? Who's going to be there? Who's expected to show up?
Man, well, you know, you got the all-time great Steve Smith from the Carolina Panthers right
okay.
in town. You know, you have Stephon Gilmore, just recently the number 10th pick in the draft from the Buffalo Bills, right out of Rock Hill. You have Sheldon Brown, you know, Benjamin Watson, Jonathan Joseph, Pro Bowl cornerback from Houston Texans. You have Cortland Finnegan. He's a Pro Bowl corner from the St. Louis Rams now. You have Josh McCown, former quarterback from the Carolina Panthers. Now he plays the Chicago Bears. Leon Washington, all-pro kickoff returner for the Seattle Seahawks. So we have, and you know, Dre Bly. We have Algie Crumpler. We have guys that have excelled in college, you know, in the National Football League. And, you know, they've won Super Bowls. We have Pro Bowlers. You know, we have a good group of guys, man. And, again, you know, don't worry about who's not at the game. Come celebrate who's at the game. So
right. That's
my opinion. You know, you know, a lot of people always ask, well, is Troy Polamalu coming? Or is Hines Ward coming? You know, and I'm like, well, you have those same caliber guys, maybe not the big name, but you have the guys right here in town that you can touch. You know, you see Troy Polamalu at the gas station. You don't know him. I know him. He don't know you. He may not talk back to you. But, you know, Sheldon Brown and Maurice Morris and Cole Simpson and Jonathan Heskey and Jeff Burris and Gerald Dixon, these are guys that you see every weekend. So I don't
right.
know if you've got comfortable and maybe, you know, we got our chest stuck out because we got guys that's in the league, so it ain't no big thing no more. But I don't think they realize how hard it is to make it to the National Football League.
Right.
And Rock Hill has been blessed with again, you know, guys that have won the Super Bowl, you know, guys that have been to the Pro Bowl, guys that have won national championships, you know, Clowney, the number one player in the nation, you know. So we have a lot to celebrate and you know, just be thankful for and blessed for right in our city. So that's
Definitely. Just
to be enough for the whole community to come out. Just to see Clowney, just to see Stephon, you know.
Just to see you.
Not too many people, right. There's not too many people that can say they know a guy that was the number pick in the 10th pick in the draft. Oh, I go
right.
to the barbershop where he goes to. And I know him. Well, he knows my name and we can talk and we shake hands. It's not like me meeting Hines Ward and asking for an autograph. This Stephon, I got his phone number. So, you know, that's just enough to just bring the community out. You know, we
Definitely. Have
enough stars right in our backyard that we should just have a celebrity game with our own people. You know, but sometimes it's hard to reach. It's hard to reach and be motivated to give back to your community because, for one, they think everything should be free, and two, it's almost like they think it's the rich getting richer. And
right.
again, I don't get a dime for this. I put all the money I put into it goes right to the recipient that we're honoring the year of the game. And again, my $5, my $10, my donation is no different than yours. My $10 doesn't have a stamp on it that can get you more money somewhere. Same $10 you got. So I just encourage, I just want everybody to come out and again, support our community. You know, it's frustrating for an athlete sometimes for, you know, you to reach back out to your community and give back to them, and sometimes they don't give you the same thing back. You know, not to say that I do it for that, but it's like, you know, we come from a small city where it's not like we from Miami where it's popping like that. So when the guys reach in their minds and give back or come up with creative ideas for Rock Hill to have something different.
Right.
I think we should support it.
Definitely.
That's just my opinion.
Definitely.
You know, it's not too many places that, you know, you're going to have all these athletes at one place in a small city like Rock Hill.
Definitely.
You know, the first year I had it, you know, my teammates and guys that I was asking to come, you know, they was like, well, where I flying to? Or, you know, do y'all still have dirt roads and all that type of stuff? All jokes and game, but, again, to even get them to come, you know, I think our community should show them a great, great time and appreciation so they can come back. You know, that's my thing.
And where can fans find information about this celebrity basketball game that's happening on May 19th?
Well, the easiest place is to go to www.ichope24.com, and that has a list of all the events, a list of all the sponsorships, a button that you can click on and get tickets. It's $5 in advance, $10 at the door. The places that you can buy the tickets, if you're from the area in Rock Hill or you're familiar with the area in Rock Hill, is, you know, Rock Hill High School, they have regular tickets and VIP tickets. You know, you can go to Wing King, Platinum Cuts, Gerald Dixon Automotives. You know, those businesses have general admission tickets. And then you can go to South Carolina Bank and Trust. That's a bank that has VIP tickets as well as general admission tickets. And it's $5 in advance, $10 at the door. You know, when you get there, you're going to have all different types of activities going on. A bounce house for your kids. You're going to have food and drinks at the concession stand. You're going to have autographs at halftime. You know, it's going to be a silent auction where you can bid on authentic jerseys and pitches and all types of sports memorabilia for low prices. You know, again, it's almost like this is a can't-miss event for $5. You know, it's not – where can you go for $5 to take a picture with Steve Smith or get his autograph?
That's a great point.
You know, to have a chance to get a signed jersey for $40, $50, $100, or however much the bid goes up when these jerseys are really worth. You know, to even get an authentic jersey made is $356, and that's for a person that has to buy them to donate them to the auction. So it's like when you think about all the perks that you're included or given or giving somebody a chance to receive, it's a no-brainer to come out and support. And, again, you sowing a seed, you know. You know, and I always live by the more you give, the more he gives you. And that's not the reason to give, but, again, you know, it's always better to give than receive because he'll give it back to you.
Definitely. Fans, make sure you go to ichope24.com. That's I, the letter C, and hope24.com. Go there, support this man's great fund, his great charity. He's got a lot of great events going on. May 19th, get out there. If you're in the area, get out there, support what he's got going on. Chris Hope, we wish you nothing but the best of luck, man, with this charity and with your free agency, man. We know you'll sign on somewhere. We're just all waiting.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it, man.
And real quickly, make sure you follow this man on Twitter, ICHope24. ICHope24. Follow Chris Hope on Twitter. Chris, let's do this again.
Yes, sir. Anytime, man. Appreciate it.
Take care. Chris Hope, free agent safety. He's got his big charity event coming up next weekend, May 19th, South Carolina, Rock Hill, South Carolina. Make sure you check his website out, ICHope24.com. That's I, the letter I, the letter C, Hope24.com. Support some of the great things he has going on, doing a great job with his charity. It's great to see players and athletes giving back and doing what they have to do within their community. He's got a great event. For $5, $5 can get you a lot. And so if you're in that area, please, please go check it out and support some of the great things that he has going on. And speaking of great things, LeBron James, it's been announced. Everybody had the press conference and everything. LeBron James has just won his third MVP. LeBron James has just won his third MVP for the Miami Heat. LeBron James, three-time MVP winner. He joins guys like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, guys like Michael Jordan, guys like Bill Russell, guys like Wilt Chamberlain, guys like Larry Bird, guys like Magic Johnson, guys like Moses Malone, guys who have won the award at least three times. And give him a lot of credit. He had another stellar season, another LeBron-like season, and he brought it. He brought it for the Miami Heat. I will say this, though. The difference between Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Michael Jordan, Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and Moses Malone is that those guys have rings. LeBron James does not at this point. Will he get the ring this year? I believe he does. I believe he does get the ring this year. I'd be shocked if he does not get the ring this year. But the difference between those three guys, those few guys I should say that I named, is they have rings and LeBron does not. Kevin Durant was second. Chris Paul was third. Kobe was fourth. And then Tony Parker was fifth. And LeBron James, you know, 27 points a game, almost 8 rebounds a game, 6 assists. He does it all. He did it all again this year. And, oh, by the way, 53% from the field. He did it all this year. He really, truly did it all this year. And the reality is with LeBron James, he's done it all his whole career. He's done everything in his career except one thing. That one thing is a title. That's the only thing that's missing from his resume is a title. If he can get that title and get that title on his resume, then that monkey will be off his back. Because right now that monkey's on his back, and that monkey is big, large, and in charge and on his back. And I think the monkey does come off his back this year, and I'd be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked because there's some good teams out west, Oklahoma City, San Antonio Spurs, and Eve. I wouldn't be shocked, but I'd be surprised, very surprised, if the Heat do not do it this year. I think they're the best team in basketball right now. And they're one of the healthiest team in basketball, and that's equally as important, especially this year. So I'd be shocked if they don't get it this year. I'd be surprised. But you never know.
And I just said they're coming out of a weak and very injured conference now. I mean, they have to be the front runner, given the conference they're in.
Well, and it helps that Derrick Rose went down. That helps. I mean, because the Bulls were their competition. I mean, I guess you can talk about the Celtics, but, hey, they're not a healthy team. Paul Pierce is struggling with his meniscus. So they're not a healthy team right now. So, and Ray Allen just came back. So how healthy are they really? And you got Avery Bradley struggling with the shoulder as well. So it is survival of the fittest. And it looks like Miami is the fittest. They are the fittest at this time, at this point. And I think that fitness will be what gets them over the top and what's going to put them in the finals and ultimately will have them win the final NBA finals. But I will say that the Boston Celtics have given the Heat a lot of problems during the regular season. The Heat and the Boston Celtics, let's be clear about that right now, they haven't gotten by the Sixers, and that's going to be a tough battle for them. That's going to be a long series. The Sixers were very competitive against the Celtics throughout the regular season. The Sixers actually won the season series between these two teams, 2-1. Blew the Celtics out on one game and beat them pretty good in the next. So this is a team of Sixers that played the Celtics very well. And so don't dismiss the Philadelphia 76ers now. They're going to give the Celtics fits. And if Paul Pierce, depending on his health, if he's not Paul Pierce, look out. The Sixers can win this series as well. And don't be surprised if the Philadelphia 76ers win this series. I'm not saying they are, but don't be surprised because this is going to be a long series. And I'm on record as saying the Celtics in 7 at this point, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was the Sixers in 6. I would not be surprised if that happened. And granted, I know the Sixers are lucky to be here. Yes, they are. We all know that. There's no arguing that. There's no dismissing that particular fact. But, hey, you play the game, and anything can happen. I mentioned this when the playoffs even started. As a Philadelphia 76ers fan, the team I wanted to play in the first round was not the Miami Heat, of course not, because I know we couldn't beat them. But the team I wanted to play was the Chicago Bulls. For the simple fact is they played the Bulls pretty well in the regular season, and also Derrick Rose, who knows how healthy he'll be, and who knows when he's going to – who knows if he will miss a few games during that series. I didn't expect Derrick Rose to tear his ACL now. That's not what I expected, and I didn't wish that, nor do I wish that on any player to tear their ACL. But I didn't expect that to happen, and I definitely didn't expect Noah to miss a considerable part of this series as well. Two of the best players missed pretty much the whole series, you know? And so it's hard to replace Noah and Derrick Rose, your two best players. It's hard to replace those guys. That's similar to if the Miami Heat lost Wade and LeBron. That's what it's similar to, if the Miami Heat lost Wade and LeBron. But, hey, you play the game, and whatever happens, happens, and this is survival of the fittest, and the Sixers survived, and they were the healthiest team, and thus they moved on against the Boston Celtics. But everybody, don't be so quick to say the Celtics are going to advance to the conference finals. This Sixers team is tough. They defend, and they played the Celtics very well throughout the course of this regular season. They won the season series. So don't be so quick. And Paul Pierce, how much does Paul Pierce have? Will he be 100% in this series? That's going to be something you have to look at as well. Do not be so quick to dismiss the Philadelphia 76ers. But I'm on record as saying that the Celtics will win this series in 7, but don't be surprised if the Sixers win it in 6. And let's bring in now a guy who's won a lot, who's done a lot, and now is a 2012 Hall of Fame inductee, the one, the only, the great Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
How you doing today? Good. Well, you know, like you said, I think, Philly's got to run Boston. Philly's got to run them. I mean, they're hurting. I mean, Ray Allen was his ankle was bothering him, was riding up early in the last series. If Philly's got young legs, I mean, they got to run them. And if they can run them and keep the tempo up and down, don't let the game slow down, I think Philly has a good chance of winning that series.
And I think, to your point, the half-court game, if it comes down to a half-court game, Boston's going to win this series easily. Because Philadelphia does not have a half-court offense. Doug Collins will tell you that. This is not a team that's good in the half-court. They have to be out and running. They got to run. If they're going to run.
And they got
to
shoot better than 39% too for the series.
Definitely. And the Bulls are a better defensive team than the Celtics. But, I mean, you're right. You got to shoot better and if you want to be successful in this series. But the Sixers have a shot. And do not dismiss the Philadelphia 76ers. And also, Willie, do not dismiss the Denver Nuggets, Game 7 tonight against the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers up 3-1. You figured after they won that game in Denver on last Sunday night, you figured this series was over. But the Denver Nuggets came back, big victory at the Staples Center, Game 5, and they came back in Game 6.
And they've been getting better. It seems like they're getting stronger. I love Denver, but it's going to be real tough to beat them in L.A. tonight.
Definitely.
But they can. I mean, I'm not going to say Denver can't win the game, but it's going to be they're going to have to play some excellent football. And Denver just they keep coming. I don't know what's happened to Pau Gasol. I mean, I don't know why he's playing out while he's playing out there shooting threes and what, you know, out on the perimeter. But I mean, if you got your big man on the perimeter, you know, you got to get him involved. You can't get Paul Gasol involved when he's out on perimeter shooting jump shots. So, I mean, they got to get him going. I mean, they got to find a way to get something out of him because he hasn't done anything this series.
Definitely. I mean, and to your point, I think it's going to be difficult for Denver. And in Game 7, you always have to favor the home team. Over the years, the statistics will tell you that in Game 7, favor the home team. History will tell you that. And so I think it's going to be difficult for Denver to win this game in L.A. And I think Kobe coming out against Bynum and Gasol, maybe that motivates those guys tonight to play better. Metawell, Peace making his return. Peace is in the building. So maybe that'll help the Lakers as well. And, again, Kobe said that Metawell, Peace is one of the guys that he can rely on. So I think the Lakers will win tonight. But, please, I will not be surprised if the Denver Nuggets won this game the way they're playing right now. They're running right now, and they're getting some good play from JaVale McGee and Gallinari. And I mean, they're a deep team. So we'll see. And also Ty Lawson's playing very well.
Ty Lawson, North Carolina Tar Heel, played great the last game. And I remember watching the association and show, and Coach Carl was saying he needed to step up, and he's really stepped up. And anyway, he's an outstanding young player, and he pushes the tempo. I like Corey Brewer when he comes off the bench. He plays hard, gives a lot of effort. I just like the way that George Carl coaches those guys. You know, he keeps them going. He pushes them. JaVale McGee, you know, like you said, he looked like a different. He looks like a. He's finally got somebody teaching him how to play basketball, and you know, he looks like a different player, and he's playing for something, and hopefully that jump starts his career because he had a lot of potential. I remember when he was trying out for the Olympic team, you know, they were talking about how much potential this kid had, and you know how athletic he is. You know, the incredible thing about JaVale McGee is he's 7-footer. But he moves around like a guy that's 6'5". You know, he plays more like a forward than he does a center. But you know, he's got a lot of upside. Farid is, I mean, the young kid they got from Morehouse State has been playing.
Farid,
they got a good young nucleus, and they need to keep those guys together.
And definitely, I mean, JaVale McGee, to your point, a very very athletic player, very athletic, and they're getting something out of him. They're getting something out of him. He's playing some good basketball for the Denver Nuggets. Let's stay in L.A. right now, Willie, and let's look at the Los Angeles Clippers. Had an opportunity last night to finish the series off in six at the Staples Center. Chris Paul banged up, hip. Blake Griffin banged up, knee. The Memphis Grizzlies, to me, and this series, this was going to be a competitive series. And you knew when this series went to 3-1. Lakers, you figured 3-1, that series was over. But this series, 3-1, you figured the Memphis Grizzlies still had an opportunity. I mean, they gave away game one. But I look at it now, and I think you have to favor the Grizzlies game seven in Memphis, especially with Paul and Griffin probably not being 100%. I think you have to favor the Grizzlies. They're a playoff-tested team, as we saw last year, beating the Spurs as the AFC. So I like the Grizzlies in Game 7. How do you see that thing playing out?
I agree. I think the Grizzlies will beat them in Game 7 because they just don't have enough guys that can score. I mean, you know, when they came down to it last night, Chris Paul's got to do too much. He lost that explosion, and I just don't think they have enough guys that can score for them. It's just too hard for them to get baskets. And if they let the Grizzlies beat them up on the boards like they did last night, the other night, then they're going to be in serious trouble. And then Zach Randolph, you know, he took over on the boards, and I think at one point they were plus 15 on the boards. And I just see, you know, I give Denver a way better shot to knock off the Lakers than the Clippers to beat the Grizzlies at home.
Wow. I mean, I think the Clipper game is going to be close. I would disagree. I think I would give the Clippers a better shot.
No.
I think they're a better team. But, I mean,
they don't have enough to go. They're banged up. Paul's banged up. Blake's banged up. How can you give the Clippers a better shot when they're banged up and they don't have another option they can score?
And when they're playing, I mean, I'll say this. I saw that game. They're playing angry. You know, Griffin seems to have his mind. They just don't seem – they seem very frustrated. And you could definitely tell that they are hurt. That's why I told you, Paul. And they're young. It's a young team. It's still a, you know, Chris Paul may have been in this league a while, but the nucleus of the team is still very young, and I don't think that they've been able to emotionally get themselves to a place where they need to just, you know, close the series out.
Well, I mean, I think you cannot discount the Memphis Grizzlies either. I mean, this is a very – and I say battle-tested because last year they played a seven-game series against the Thunder, and they beat the Spurs, the number one seed. So this is a battle-tested team here, the Memphis Grizzlies.
And they got more experience. And you got to give experience to the Grizzlies. They got more experience. They've
definitely
been there. I give experience too. So, you know, the thing about it is with the Nuggets and the Lakers, I mean – you know, Bynum's doing all this talking, and then he sits on the bench, and you know, I don't know what Bynum's doing, but all I'm telling you is this: I think I give the Nuggets a better chance of beating the Lakers. Than the Clippers beating what's called. And Marc Gasol's better than his brother now. The way Paul Gasol is playing, Marc Gasol's playing, way better than Paul Gasol. But I just don't like the way they're playing Paul Gasol. I mean, what are they doing with him? I mean, I liked them better when they both had him, one playing high, one playing low in the post. But now they got him out on the perimeter. He's the low post. You got to get him involved early. And Paul can shoot the ball very well, but you got to get him involved, get him some easy touches early, and let him expand his game. But you can't just have him out there running around on the perimeter. I don't know what they're doing.
And how good would Lamar Odom look in a Laker uniform at this point?
Great.
So we look at it now, Willie, and the Miami Heat, LeBron James, three-time MVP winner, got the MVP today. Only thing that he doesn't have is a championship. I think that'll change this year. But, I mean, the Indiana Pacers, and I'm not going to dismiss the Pacers in this series. The size that they have the size advantage. And they have some players, Granger, George Hill's play well. They have the depth. The Pacers are going to push the Heat in this series. This is going to be a six- or seven-game type of series. This is going to be a long series, a long, tough series.
The problem with them is just, you know, if the Heat can slow some of their stars down, you know, they don't have enough firepower for the Heat. I mean, the only thing with them, I mean, do they have enough firepower to keep up with the Heat? And like you said, I mean, I like Indiana. They're tough. They're gritty. It's not the regular season when the Heat beat them. They got to understand they're playing the playoff thing. I just think LeBron is playing at such a level right now. You know, the guy's playing great. He had a great year. I was watching the halftime show. Two other guys two other guys, when they got their third MVP, that was the first time they won their titles. Two of the all-time greats. You know, it took them until their third MVP when they won their first title. And you know, I hope it's this year for LeBron. You know, he's been a consistently very, very excellent basketball player. He's got, for him to be around with the all-time greats, he's got to win some rings. So you know, his individual numbers and what he's done over his career speaks for itself. But the only thing he doesn't have now is the rings, and he needs to start winning them.
And I think he needs to start winning them, and I think the monkey finally gets off his back this year. I'd be surprised if they lost it. I mean,
it's going to be a tough series, though. It's going to be a tough series.
Definitely.
I mean, the only team, it's a couple of teams in the championship that scare me. San Antonio or Oklahoma City. Those two teams, it's going to be a tough. If they get the ring this year, they're going to earn it. Let's say that. They're going to earn it. It's going to be a tough series right here with Indiana. You know, the Eastern Conference series is going to be tough. And this is going to be the tough series. And whoever they play in the finals is going to be a tough Western team, battle-tested. So if they win it, LeBron and those guys are going to earn it. So we'll see how it plays out. I agree with you. I hope he does get it. But he's had an excellent year, and he deserved the MVP.
We're talking to 11-time Pro Bowler, 2012 Hall of Fame inductee Willie Rofe. And Willie, let's switch gears now. Let's talk about a guy who earned it last Saturday night, Floyd Mayweather Jr., unanimous decision over Miguel Cotto. I thought Floyd was impressive. I thought Cotto was competitive, but I really didn't think he was in the fight. He was competitive, but you knew that Floyd was in control that whole time. And Floyd showed what Floyd is. Floyd is a great, great boxer. Floyd, and he fought. He fought Cotto, and he beat him. And I was saying he could have stopped him in the 12th if he really pushed it. But, I mean, he really was in control of that fight. But give Cotto a lot of credit. Cotto did bloody Floyd's nose, and Floyd wasn't as pretty as he always is after a fight. But, I mean, he was in control of that fight. How did you see that fight, Willie?
Same. I agree with you. He controlled the fight, the entire fight. He did what he had to do. Cotto did fight hard, and Cotto is – he has a tough chin, and you know, Floyd respects Cotto. He respects boxing. You know, he's a real tough fighter. Like you said, Floyd's one of the best. I mean, he's got to fight Pacquiao, and there's some good guys around that weight class that he can fight. But everybody wants to see Pacquiao. They just have to get the deal worked out with the money, and it's going to be a great fight. But, you know, it's exciting to watch Floyd. Floyd is. Has there ever been a time, if you guys think back when it wasn't a heavyweight that carried boxing? Floyd is basically carrying boxing, him and Pacquiao. Yeah. But Floyd Mayweather is the biggest attraction in boxing. Everybody wants to go. His numbers, he breaks all the numbers everybody else does. So Floyd is carrying boxing. You can talk about Floyd and say what you want to say about him, but he's carrying boxing. And, you know, it was sad to see Sugar Shane get beat up like that by that young Canelo. But, you know, you can't box forever. And I respect the fact that Floyd knows when it's time. He knows when it's going to be time for him to leave. And hopefully, he said he's walking away at 37. He walks away at 37. If he walks away undefeated, you know, you can make the argument who was the greatest, you know, pound-for-pound boxer. And he will be in that discussion. But he is the one that is carrying boxing right now.
And yeah, he very much so is carrying boxing. And the thing about Floyd is this. Hate him or love him, but guess what? His office, his persona on the 24/7, he sells fights that way. That's how he sells fights. He knows how to market himself outside the ring, and he knows what to do inside the ring. He works hard to be successful inside the ring and outside the ring in a lot of ways. He knows how to market himself, and he's the villain in a lot of those 24/7s, and it's working. It's selling pay-per-views. I mean, 1.5 million pay-per-view buys, for that particular fight. The gate, they made a lot of money on the gate. A lot of money was made with these two going at it. And Cotto brings some things to the table as well in terms of pay-per-view. But nobody brings what Floyd brings to pay-per-view. But hopefully, like you said, Willie, him and Pacquiao will finally get it on. It's a long time coming. I'm just afraid that those two will get it on when it's too late, when they're past their prime. And I mean, it'll probably still be a good fight, but it may not be the type of fight that we wanted to see or could see. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen this year.
If it doesn't happen this year, it happens early next fall. But, yeah, it could happen this year. It could happen, like, in November, December.
The Floyd coming out of prison, we don't know how long he's going to stay there. I mean, he's scheduled for 87 days, I believe. But, obviously, I don't think he'll do all that time. I don't know. I don't see 2012. I'm more looking at 2013.
Well, maybe it could happen in the beginning. It needs to happen in the beginning of summer of 2013. It needs to happen within another year.
Right. And Floyd said he wants to come back for another fight this year, so it should be interesting to see if he does come back. And if he does come back, it's going to be interesting to see who it is against. I mean, you got Berto's about to fight Ortiz, and maybe Berto could be on the table there. Or even they talk Alvarez, but Oscar De La Hoya is saying that now Alvarez may not be ready for Floyd at this point, and I don't think he is. There's also talk of a Sergio Martinez, which would be an interesting fight. Martinez, guy who's fought at 154 and also is the champion at 160.
I mean, come on. Yeah, there's none of these fights are interesting. I mean, there's one interesting fight. I mean, it's getting to a point where, you know, he's going to just beat up these pretenders. You know, if they don't fight, it's all over money, and we understand that. But please don't say these fights are going to be interesting. The most interesting fight he just had, and it was unfortunate because he made a good fighter in Cotto really look marginal. I mean, he really handled – it was a boring fight, Paul. You know that.
No, it was not. That was a very – that was not a boring fight. I don't think he made Cotto look marginal.
It was competitive. I liked it.
It was a competitive fight.
You know, It was a good fight. At least Cotto got to him some. Usually nobody's even getting to him, Jim.
Right.
At least Cotto did get to him.
He didn't hurt him. He didn't hurt. All you see is a guy who, the one thing that you see, he punches so much now, and his percentage of hits are down, but to throw 600 punches in a fight, over 600 punches in a fight, he's in a condition, I think, that few athletes are able to bring themselves in. Walking into a prison for 30 days, I would not want to be the man fighting Mayweather coming out of a 30-day jail sentence, because he's probably going to just be in there, you know, pumping weight and walking out of prison with a real big axe to grind in a ring. And unless it's Pacquiao, to me, it's affirmed that there's really no – it's all pretenders out there. Young, up-and-coming fighters who want to prove themselves but are never going to be able to hit that.
Well,
they're not
going
to stand up and win.
Well, it has to be Pacquiao. I hope it is Pacquiao. I don't think it will be, but I hope it is. And those guys are fighting everybody else but each other. And also, to your point, I mean, coming out of prison for 30 days, I think I would hate to be Miss Jackson, Floyd's fiancé.
Well, maybe she'll be happy, though. Maybe she'll be happy.
Maybe a change of pace. You know, maybe you could change it up a little bit.
She definitely looks good.
He may put his lips on things, Paul. You don't know. He may come out more appreciative.
Well, I'm probably so. I would hope so. I mean, Ms. Jackson is a lovely woman, very much so. I mean, sometimes I get tempted to call her Miss Gant, but I mean, I realize that I have Mrs. Gant at home. But, Willie, as always, sir, it was a pleasure talking to you, and as always, let's do it again.
All right, y'all have a good one.
All right. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/weekend, where you can listen to this great show and other great shows. Make sure you follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. For everybody here, go for it. Jeremy Espy, Paul Gann here. Hope you have a great day. Happy Mother's Day to everyone that's out there, all the mothers that are out there being good mothers, hopefully, and taking care and handling their business. See you later. Take care.
Bye.